This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of Eason will join us, and we will go over the NFL, the playoffs, what turned out to be a wild Week 18. Now, this is part one of the podcast, recording this right before Vikings-Lions. Part two will include a recap of Vikings Lions and everything else that happened in the day, but just going to spend this first part here talking about everything else, because we have the other things set. We have playoff matchups, and it was a fun day. This was as fun a day as you can remember in the NFL. And this is why the NFL, look, sometimes the games aren't great, the teams aren't great, but the NFL, I wouldn't say never disappoints, but rarely disappoints. And not to turn this to an NFL versus college thing, because I love both of them and it's not, you know, time for it, but man, you get seven of the eight games that are pretty lopsided in college. The NFL, and you could say, hey, there's some conspiracy theory when the games start to get out of hand, the other team starts to get calls. Maybe there's some truth to that, but the games were so much fun, especially in the early window. The late window was not much going on. The finishes weren't great. The games were great, but I really enjoyed the 1 o'clock window when I went in thinking, man, this is kind of not a waste of time, but none of these games are games you have to watch. We kind of expected Tampa to win. We expected the teams to take care of business, which they did, but it was not that easy. And just going through these games here, Tampa goes into the day 14.5-point favorite. If they win or Atlanta loses, Tampa gets the NFC South. They expected that to happen. And very early on, New Orleans is up 13-3. Meanwhile, Atlanta is going back and forth. And there was one point where Atlanta had a lead and Tampa was down 10. And then there was a point where it looked like maybe Tampa would backdoor and they would both lose. You thought for a second maybe Atlanta was going to steal the division, so that was fun. At the end, Atlanta ends up losing, and they lose because that game went to overtime. They lose the toss, and they had already been eliminated by the time overtime started. Tampa did rally. They win by 8, but there was a lot of drama there. I thought the Green Bay-Chicago game was a lot of fun with Green Bay. You know, do they care? Do they not care? Love gets his hand hurt. Then all of a sudden, they're going to steal the game. Chicago fumbles. They kick a long field goal. Not so fast. Chicago comes back. They kick a long field goal at the buzzer. They finally get one of these two-minute drills right. They sink a field goal at the end to win the game. And now Green Bay is set up as the 7. Meanwhile, Washington and Dallas was a back-and-forth game where Washington wins at the end. So the games were fun. They were competitive. They were extremely high-scoring. There were only a couple of unders here. This was a bad day to be an under-better. Even games like Jets-Dolphins went way over. Just a ton of scoring in a lot of these games. 49ers in Arizona just going through some of these in the late window. Denver, Kansas City just died because Denver was just dominating the game as they won that game. It was a 38-0 final. But, man, these games for the most part were more exciting than I thought. We got a lot more juice than I thought. And then you have the other subplot of New England. And I talked about this with Bear on Friday, and I'll get to the games here in a minute. And like I said, we'll get to Minnesota, Detroit here on the other side with JVT, and we'll get to all the games with him. I said on Friday with JVT and Bears, like, I like the Patriots plus the points. I said, if you're the Patriots, you have to make up your mind going into this game, what you're going to do with the coach, and make the plan very clear, because the last thing you can do is have Mayo think, hey, I don't know if I'm coming back. I better win this game so I don't get fired. And then you had winning the game and costing yourself the number one pick in the draft, which they did. They fall all the way to 4th. So the order goes Browns, Titans, Giants, Patriots, and then the 5th pick is going to Jacksonville. Raiders fall all the way to 6th. You needed to get your ducks in a row and say, hey, you're either fired and we're going to just use an interim and we're going to tell that interim to lose the game. Or we're going to figure out a way to lose the game, even though they played Milton a lot. You know, I didn't watch a ton of this, and I don't know how you lose a game, because it's physical football, such a physical game where you can't go out there and just not try. I guess if you really want to be committed to it, you just kind of, you play a wide receiver at quarterback. And I know you maybe get in trouble with the league. You make a mockery of the game. You just say, hey, we're going to put, you know, our practice squad wide receiver at the game and just hand the ball off, give him a chance to throw. And again, you're making a farce out of the game. But if you really want the number one pick, I guess that's how you do it. It's really tricky to tank in the NFL. We saw the same situation with Texans and Colts a couple years ago where Lovey's on the way out. And he says, you know what? I'm not coming back anyway. I'm going to win the game and I'll screw you guys. And look, maybe it ended up okay. It seems like it did with them getting Stroud and Will Anderson. But you'd rather have the first pick than not have it. To go from 1st to 4th and is look, you never know how these picks are going to turn out. But you'd rather have the first pick than 4th. Even if you want to trade out of it, that's a lot of stuff you can get back. Moving back a few slots for a Patriot team that needs all the help they can get. So they fire Mayo, they win the game. They're just a disaster, because again, you got to be on the same page. You got to get yourself organized and say, hey, we don't want this. This coach thinks he has to win. We can't let that happen either. Tell him, hey, you're coming back next year, but do not win this game and make whatever lineup possible to go out of your way to lose this game if you can, which look, just do your best to put out the worst possible team and try to tank the game. And don't say it in those terms, because I know you can get in trouble and that's dicey, but you can't do what you did where you let the guy coach. And it sounded like, I don't think he got fired because he won the game. I know people have suggested that. Schefter said before the game, it was looking like he was out. And Schefter doesn't usually take a stance like that unless he's got some information. That was pretty strongly worded from Schefter. So New England fires the coach. They blow the pick. They go from first to fourth. Giants end up with the third pick. Titans will be picking first. We'll have plenty of time to do draft. Not going to sit here and project, who they're going to pick. Obviously, Sanders, Ward, the names at the top. Hunter, we'll see, who decides to do what. But again, that's a conversation for a different day. But that was one of the interesting subplots for the day. And what turned out to be, again, a fun day. And it was odd watching the final red zone, 7:45, 7:50 Eastern. Scott Hansen says, I'll see you in September. Wow. It does kind of hit home because, if you're somebody that watches the red zone, I think a lot of people do, and especially as the games are wrapping up, where, hey, instead of flipping around, you let them flip around for you. Football's not over, but the whole NFL regular season, the red zone, the multiple games at once, all of that is over. And September does feel like a long way away. And I know I say it all the time, but it does come and go pretty quickly. So that did hit home pretty hard to say, hey, see you in September. That's a long way from here. We will be pretty much done. We will get to a baseball season, which is a few months away, start it, and be, 80-something percent of the way. We'll have a month left in baseball. By the next time we have an NFL Sunday with regular season games and red zone, we will have an NBA Finals and playoffs concluded. We'll have a March Madness. I mean, we're going to have a ton of things that happen now between the next time you watch an NFL regular season game, and if your team is done, that's, if your favorite team is not in the playoffs, that's the weight you have as a football fan. So that does go by quickly, and it is crazy to think about that, and it didn't really even hit home until he said, hey, see you in September. But we have playoff games, and I will say right off the bat, I am sure everybody is going to be teased. I'll give the lines first, and by the time I talk to JVT, I'm sure we'll have some of the times for these. Eagles, Packers fall to the 7 again. They didn't seem like they kind of had one foot in, one foot out. Do they want to win? Do they care? Well, now you're going to Philly for what is a very tough 2-7 game. Philly -3.5 against Green Bay, a rematch of the opening game in Brazil that Friday night back in early September. So Philly laying 3.5, total 47.5. And a super talented team is going to be going home for a team like Green Bay that gets the benefit of the doubt. And Green Bay ended up 1-5 in the division, which is just crazy to think about. But a team that a lot of people think can go to the Super Bowl, one of these two teams is going to be out right away. And if it is Green Bay, you're going to look back and say, man, they were everybody's sleeper. They got all this benefit of doubt, and they went 1-done. So a little bit of pressure on Green Bay. It would be a bad season, leave a bad taste in their mouth if they do lose this game to Philly here. Haven't thought about it yet. Dying to lay 3.5, but I'm not dying to take the Packers here again. Just initial thoughts on these games. I haven't really dove into it, had opinions on this. Chargers, Texans, Chargers laying 2.5 at this point. I would imagine that gets to 3. I don't know that you'll get to 3.5, but if you like the Chargers, I would bet that now. I want no part of the Texans. I just think the Chargers have a better coach, a better quarterback, and I would expect that line to continue to go up. And if you like the Chargers, get that in now. I want no part of the Texans. Steelers, Ravens laying 8.5. Steelers, and that was another pretty good game Saturday night. And again, the NFL just, more times than not, the NFL delivers with these close games, and that was a fun game Saturday night. Like having the Saturday games, especially when there's no college games. College games, especially the playoffs, kind of clog it. Where, hey, it's an NFL game. There's no college playoffs. You can just relax, enjoy the Saturday games. I did enjoy that one Saturday night. But the Steelers lost 4 in a row. Not too many teams. There's only been a couple teams in the playoffs in playoff history. I think the 99 Lions were the last ones to do it, to lose 4 in a row and still make the playoffs. Last time the Steelers won a game was December 8th. They haven't looked good. Wilson looked bad on Saturday night, a little spark late, but they could have made a play to steal that game, which would have been important because you would have avoided the Ravens. But a rematch of the game a few weeks ago, I think it was right before Christmas, they played on that Saturday. These teams split, so the Ravens will be laying 8.5. I'd imagine that line would go up too, just because if anything, and I'll get to my pick here in a minute, they're going to not want you to tease the Ravens with the Bills and the Broncos. Bills laying 7.5 to Denver. That's going to be an obvious teaser. You take them both under 7, both under 3. And now that's just a teaser they're going to get loaded with. And Doesn't mean it's going to win. Doesn't mean it's not going to win. But I would expect them to these lines to creep up to make you think twice. If Ravens is sitting there 9, 9.5, that'll make you think twice about teasing it. That'll get it out of teaser range. And I want no part of Pittsburgh. And I do wonder, you know, if Pittsburgh goes into Baltimore and loses by, you know, 13, 14 plus points or whatever, does the infatuation with Tomlin and these, hey, we have a winning season, does that wear off a little bit? Because I know you say, hey, overachieves, he has no quarterback. It's still 2016 since the last time they won a playoff game. This is another December, you know, late season swoon. At some point, it's like, hey, how much fun is this to just sneak in the back end of the playoffs and then sneak in because they were leading division. They were minus 300 to win the division with, you know, a few weeks to play. But does this get old? Be a wild card team, lose in the first round, not be competitive, and then just go through the whole cycle again. At some point, you know, I know you never bottom out, but these quarterbacks on the discount aisle, it seems like they are in purgatory where they can't compete with the Mahomes, the Lamars, the Allens. They just don't have one of those guys, but they have all this pride. Hey, we want to go 9-8 and make the playoffs. It seems like they're stuck a little bit, which I think I made that point back in the summer. I was wrong. I thought they'd go under 8.5, but I do wonder if Baltimore wins, and I do think Baltimore will win, you know, where that leaves Pittsburgh. So Baltimore laying 8.5. I mentioned the Bills laying 7.5 to the Broncos. Broncos, look, you take care of business against the Chiefs backups, but what does that mean going into this week? I'm not sure. I'm indifferent on the 7.5 again. I'll dig into these games more as the week goes on. We'll see what JVT thinks. But to me, a Bills-Ravens teaser, especially 7.5, 8.5, and hopefully those lines are still available by the time you listen, which I'm not sure they will be. To me, that is an absolute slam dunk teaser. The other NFC game we know at the moment, Commanders and Bucks. Bucks laying 3. And this is a rematch of week 1. The Bucks won in Tampa, won comfortably. I don't take too much from that. Total 50.5. I would expect that total to go up. So over 50.5, I think that's already bumped up. I think I looked a minute ago. It was 49.5. I would expect that to continue to go up. So for me, by the time you listen to this, if it's still 8.5 and 7.5, I would tease those two AFC favorites, Ravens and Bills. And when we get back with JVT, we will have the rest of the matchups. We will know who the one seed in the NFC is. So fun day of football, but we will discuss all of it next with JVT. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. The field is set. We have our matchups good to go here. The Lions are the number one seed. The Vikings miss a million opportunities. Wide open receivers, missed field goals, you name it. Dropped interceptions, and the score is a little misleading, but Detroit rolls. To discuss it all is the great JVT, our buddy. He is back, VEASAN Primetime. JVT, what's going on, man? I guess I'll start with this. Who did you think was coming out of the NFC going into this game? And who do you think is coming out of the NFC now that we know the field?
Ooh, I mean, heading into this game, I think I was leaning toward Philly only because I don't think Minnesota or Detroit is really proving itself to be trustworthy. And maybe I'm letting what I just watched cloud my judgment a little bit, but they feel like the team that had the least amount of flaws. And then you watch that game and I understand how good Detroit was, but I can't get the last 4 weeks prior to this week out of my mouth with Detroit. I mean, statistically, they were the worst defense in the National Football League over the last 4 weeks. Well over 7 yards per play, dead last in EPA per play allowed. I still think I trust Philly. I think the answer to the question for both of those would be Philly.
I haven't dove into these matchups yet. Again, it's fresh. We're just seeing the lines, the matchups, but I tend to agree with you. I think, you know, for a while now, I think Philly's probably been the most complete team. I think if Minnesota won this game, I was feeling confident that, hey, you know what? You get a week to rest. You have to go through Minnesota. I thought they had a good chance to come out of the conference, but what a terrible, terrible performance. Every opportunity, I thought Darnold played terrible. Darnold killed him in the game. I thought O'Connell did a bad job. And it was a subtle thing, but he calls timeout 28 seconds left in the first half where, hey, you let that clock run to like 17, 18. You still got a couple timeouts. You're not going to run out of time. Detroit's not going to have time by the time they get the ball. There's going to be 9-10 seconds where, hey, they get it with, well, I think they got it with 20. You can throw a couple balls, you know, in bounds, call your timeout, kick a field goal. It was a subtle thing. It's not why they lost, but boy, I was down on how Minnesota played, coached, everything tonight. Terrible.
It's funny you mentioned that. So I was watching the game with our cohort, Matt Humans, and only fans, OnlyFans, OnlyPlayers.com, fame and fortune, Doug Kazarian. And I was telling, we were getting into disagreement because I was like, I don't know what O'Connell's doing here at the end of the first half. Like, I don't really like that at all. Like, no, that's why you're running. I'm like, no. Like, and I also don't like approaching a possession where you're almost approaching it like you know you're going to fail, right? Like, that's why you let the clock run off and call the timeout, because you're like, we're just going to settle for the field goal here anyway. And I don't, like, no, I want as much time as possible. I want to take shots in the end zone. I want to score a touchdown. It's a game that you have to win. And I didn't really like it. And I'll say this. I thought they kind of failed in almost all facets. Like, their offensive line wasn't good. Darnold wasn't good. O'Connell wasn't good.
I was fine with their defense.
Great.
I thought their defense did as much. It's almost like in baseball, you know, holding a great offense to, like, you know, two runs through six, seven. At some point, the Dodgers are going to score runs. Like, you can only do so much. I can't ask more of the defense. I thought the defense was fine. I thought every other aspect of the game was really bad.
No, I completely agree. So I'm with you. Like, I was really feeling Minnesota these last few weeks. It performed so well, and they performed so well in certain situations. Like, I was very impressed with what they did against Seattle, and then to go immediately follow that up with a win the way they did over Green Bay. Like, very impressed with the way they handled themselves, and thought they were going to show up much better. Like, if I were to tell you of those two teams that played tonight, one of these put everything out there on a Monday night to get revenge over a team that eliminated them last year, like, you would think, like, oh, that was Minnesota. Nope, it was Detroit.
Yeah, and it's interesting where going into the games last week, it felt like everybody's on Green Bay. Green Bay was a favorite in Minnesota, where Minnesota was the disrespected team. And I don't know how you quantify this or what this means, but then the pendulum swung maybe too far the other way, where it seemed like everyone was on Minnesota. And I like Minnesota too. I thought Detroit was, their defense was the worst of the four units. But that being said, going into the game, there was a little bit of, all right, everyone disrespected Minnesota. Now everyone's kind of overcompensating and respecting Minnesota too much. And I don't know, it's weird to, you know, kind of think about the game in that way sometimes.
Yeah, would agree. Can I ask you, who do you think, I tweeted this out, who do you think did more damage to their award campaign, Kevin O'Connell for Coach of the Year or Sam Darnold for Comeback Player of the Year?
I think Darnold Comeback Player of the Year is, I don't want to use the word dead. I think O'Connell will probably win. I would not vote for him. I'm not in the mood to be voting for any Vikings at this moment. He's a 5 seed who didn't show up, I don't think, in a big game. But I think he'll probably win. Hey, he still won 14 games with Sam Darnold. I think Comeback Player of the Year is such a debatable, like, standard, such a debatable, like, there's such a, you know, controversial rubric where any sort of uncertain, like, any reason
it's
not
a
to
subjective award anyway.
No, subjective anyway. And to play this badly, boy, I don't think Darnold will win it, but that raises the question. Like, do you give it to Burrow? Is Burrow going to win it for the second time in like 4 years? Cause he missed the last 5 or 6 games, a little wrist injury. I have no idea. And I want to get Aaron Schatz on. I think I'm gonna have Aaron Schatz on the Wednesday show. I have no idea. Like, who's even going to win.
I just wonder, like to your point too, like, can you come back twice?
Exactly.
Like, you've already come back. Like, how do you come back again?
And part of the comeback is, like, what are you coming back from? It's like, we all expected Burrow to be good. It's like, all right, he had a little wrist injury. He was good. Then he got hurt for like a little bit, but the setback has to set up the comeback. I don't buy Burrow as a legitimate candidate. Maybe he'll win it by default. You know, funny, we came into this year where it's like, all right, all these quarterbacks are coming back from injuries, Cousins, Rodgers, Burrow, one of them has to win it. None of them really, unless you think it's Burrow, the other two can't win it. Herbert doesn't have the case. Could a J.K. Dobbins win? I have no idea where you go for this. Or maybe, you know what, maybe as we talk in circles here, maybe Darnold does still win the award by default. I have no idea who you vote for. This will be fascinating because I think you'll get, there's 50 different voters. You're going to get like, man, dozen, 15, maybe 20 different like processes here in terms of votes. I don't know you go.
I think it could lead to a Tom Thibodeau, Monty Williams scenario. If we remember, Thibodeau won Coach of the Year over Monty Williams because he had more second place votes, and Monty Williams had shown up on more, or like fewer third place, whatever it was. Like, he was on fewer ballots overall and whatever, and Thibodeau ended up sneaking it away from him. So maybe it's something like that where one of these guys wins it because there's just so many votes in so many different directions where somebody with like more second place votes ends up stealing it. So I can't wait to see it. I've got Darnold, full disclosure, 12-1 to win it. But I thought it was more of a number grab because you saw the writing on the wall that thing was going to shorten up, and we'll see what happens from there. So,
I'll turn your question on you. Who wins Comeback Player of the Year? Life on the line. Forget the odds. Who wins?
I was going to say, if I die, I fail. If I die, huh? Or if I die, if I fail. I'll trust even though he did me dirty tonight, I'll trust Sam Darnold. I think the story's good enough. And you see these people like Shine and like Florio and others really pushing back. Because at the end of the day, with all these voters bitching about what's going on with this award, this is on the AP because they left the door open with the other circumstances. You don't put that in your quote-unquote clarification of the award. And then people are going to ask, well, what are other circumstances? And these extend to other circumstances. And if you look at it, and I kind of tire of people saying, because it's funny, you'll hear people say, well, he's only coming back from sucking. Yeah, he is. And he's coming back. Like, you even use the phrase when you're talking about it, whether or not you feel that's a worthy comeback. Well, you don't have a vote. If you had a vote, then you wouldn't vote for him. I think the story is enough where you look at him and what this award has been that I'll say that he gets the edge. Because I think there's just not a really clear guy that you would look at and feel comfortable with. Again, like, if I'm voting, I don't know if I vote for Burrow. He's already come back. Why am I voting for him again? I think I ultimately land on Darnold. So if he doesn't, so strike me dead, I guess.
Yeah, he might win. And Darnold might be the comeback player of the year. But I've been back and forth in this. I've been just torn. I don't think Darnold will be coming back to the Minnesota Vikings. I know it's only one game and he's been great this year. I don't know how you sit there and you give that guy, you know, whatever, 4 years, $120 million after that performance. Okay, it's only 60 minutes, but man, JJ McCarthy's on a rookie deal. You picked him 10th or 11th in the draft. That, unless he goes nuclear here and leads him to a Super Bowl, boy, that's going to be a tough one to stomach when you're signing over the paperwork this offseason to ink him up long term.
Unless you give him the Geno Smith deal, right? Like, where it's just all incentive laden and whatnot, if he would take that. Because there's also the other question of, are these other teams going to go coming and calling? Like, will San Francisco try to get him back? Will the Raiders try to get him? Will any of these teams that need a stopgap quarterback go and get him one more time? It's the real question.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thinking, and we'll move on after this, is that the GM is so good and he did so well with the cap space this offseason, and O'Connell can coach him up. And if you bring Flores back, he can coach him up, that, hey, it's a little bit of money ball thing here, where it's just, it wasn't Darnold, it was the pieces around him. And, Darnold's not going to be as good if he's hogging up, 18-20% of the cap. So,
yep.
I don't know. Who do you think wins coach of the year before we move on?
I think that's O'Connell, no problem. Yeah. I think when you look at pure coaching jobs,
who's second?
I don't know. That's the real question. I mean, I guess it would be Campbell just because of the way that they finished.
I can't stand Payton. I'd give it to Payton, even though I can't stand him.
Like, Sean Payton's done a good job with a quarterback, too. I think they've shown some pretty strong limitations at times throughout the year. He's got the team in the playoffs, so I think that's a pretty good candidate. Obviously, Tomlin should get some votes, so I wonder if the end of the year,
I don't think he'll get any votes. I think you and I might get as many votes. Losing your last four is a tough one. I don't know.
I take some on he doesn't get a single vote. I think he gets some votes. I don't know if it's enough for runner-up, but – like, there's a couple of guys where you can make a strong case for overall, but I would ultimately say, again, like, I die if I'm not, I'd probably say that Dan Campbell probably ends up as runner-up.
Yeah, and remember, Reed is 15-1 in games that matter.
Yep.
Peyton's got a good case. Quinn has a good case. Maybe Tomlin comes in, fifth. Losing four in a row, I don't think he coached well the last month. A lot of give-up punts. I don't think Tomlin's going to sniff this award.
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of a nerd for this kind of stuff. Like, I like the nuances of things, right? So that's why I think O'Connell's a shoe-in. Like, if you look at the nuance of what he did this year, of what he did with Darnold, the turnaround of this team, this overall, he's been great. I mean, shoot, dude. I think you can make an argument for Dave Canales and what he did to resurrect Bryce Young's career at the end of the season to get some votes. Canales was awesome down the stretch with what he was doing with that team. And again, today, Bryce Young looked like he was clearly better than a CJ Stroud type at the end of the year. So I don't think he's going to get it. I'm just saying, I like looking at those types of things. And I think O'Connell has enough in his quiver, if you will, that he's going to win this thing with ease.
Yeah, you're probably right. And I try to keep it professional in doing this podcast, but I am a Viking fan. And if I were the Vikings owner, I'd probably be needing to be restrained from firing him after this performance. But they will play another game next week against the Rams, and there are spreads for all of these games, some rematches. I think a pretty good first round. Anything jump out to you in terms of these lines?
Yes, I did admit I made a couple of bets. The first one I bet, I laid 3.5 with Philly against Green Bay. I don't like where Green Bay's at here at this point. I think it's a bad matchup for them, too. I was talking with Alex Schoaf. Alex Schoaf, rhymes with loaf, ESPN Milwaukee. He the other day on Live Bet Saturday, you were off. And the one thing that we brought up was, look, this is a Green Bay Packers team that needs to play with a lead, right? They have to establish the run. They have to get out to a lead. They have to control time of possession. I don't think you're going to be able to do that here against the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles are going to, at some point, you would assume, because they're a good team, be able to grab a lead. Are you going to be able to stay on that path? The other part of this is, and I know Jair Alexander has missed a lot of time, but Alexander is out. The secondary is kind of beat up. I think Philly's going to be able to score some points here. I think all of this points to a Philly win. I was surprised it was 3.5. I thought it was going to be like 4.5. So I laid 3.5. We're heading in that direction. That was the first bet I made there, Philadelphia over Green Bay.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird. Green Bay went, for all the accolades, for all the love they get, and look, they've got a lot of talent. They're a good team. 1-5 in the division. Doesn't that just sound weird, look weird on, you know, written on a piece of paper?
Did you see the meme? It was so it's the picture of Tiger Woods and John Daly.
I think,
and
you retweeted it. I think that's where I saw it, where it didn't even register. I was like, wow, they are 1-5 because they got swept by the Vikings and Lions and then split with the Bears.
Well, it's like the other one where it's, you know, the cartoon, the sexual harassment, where it's like the big fat pimp
flirting
pimply
versus
guy.
Harassment.
Yeah, versus flirting versus harassment. Like, you look at that, and you're like, it's seriously, you're right, because I didn't hit me until today either. Oh. You look at it, you're like, geez, you're right. Like, 1-5 in the division, and like, just barely, like, I don't know, man, this team's just not in a really good spot. And I think that they're a team that just isn't constructed at this point right now. And by the way, we should also note too, looks like, well, I haven't seen the official wording, Watson not being available, I would assume that is the case after he went down today and the way he went down, just to not have that presence to stretch a defense and have them have to account for that. Now all of a sudden everything gets a little bit more compact when you're talking about throwing the ball downfield. I think it's a really big loss for them too.
Yeah. And look, whoever loses that game, and somebody's going to lose that game, they can't tie. That is a bitter pill to swallow. Like, for all the love Green Bay got all year, if they're going home 1-done, they lost to Philly their first game back in Brazil back early September, get swept by the Lions, get swept by the Vikings. If they, you know, have to put their tail between their legs, go home without really beating a good team all year, you go into the offseason, I mean, you're going to bring LaFleur back. You're going to bring Love back. It's not, you know, you're not changing anything up, but man, That's a pretty empty feeling for whoever loses this game, I feel like.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think if you're Green Bay, you can just kind of rest on the fact that, like, we're a youngish team and, you know, maybe just we're on the right path. We're going to get better, whatever it is. But, yes, it would be a bitter pill. And I think for Philly, I think it'd be a little worse just because you made it to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. You've been wanting to get back to that moment. You're, by all accounts, a better team than you were that year. And Jalen Hurts is starting to look a little bit more comfortable. And by the way, I don't feel 100% confident. We should note, I believe Hurts is still technically in concussion protocol. So, I think he's just, I think they're just biding their time because they knew he wasn't going to play this week. But that is just a small note to keep an eye on at the beginning of the week.
I have a feeling Dr. Matthew Modine from Any Given Sunday will be by to clear him and make sure he's good to go.
By the way, I'm such a Tanner McKee stan that I don't want to mind if it was McKee that gets a start. Kid looks good.
Anything else? I made the point, and I recorded, you know, part one of this podcast right before the Vikings Lions game, and I was like, man, get Bills Ravens teasers in your account while you still can. And even in the hour or so that's passed, they're starting to drift. Ravens is drifting, Bills Broncos is drifting. So to me, that's an obvious teaser, and I'm probably gonna close that where it's just you can't tease it or you have to pay a real premium. But I don't know, anything else jump out to you in terms of these spreads?
Yeah, I made a bet that I think I'm gonna regret. I took Houston money line against Los Angeles. I don't think that the Chargers should be rated that much better than Houston. I don't really like the Chargers that much. The last two games, congrats for beating up on the Patriots and the Raiders. I don't think that team is particularly good. I don't think they're very explosive. I think that's been a team that's really picked on a rough schedule, and I think that Houston is a little bit better than we're giving them credit for now at this point. I thought it was going to be pick. Like, this is totally based on just what I thought this number was going to be. So this was a number play for me. I thought opening that at 3, and then you're talking about plus 140-ish on the money line, I thought it was a little extreme. So I took a bite of Houston money line.
I'm not surprised. I agree. Generally, they're making pay a tax a little bit on the Chargers, but I thought Steelers, Houston, if that was the game, was going to be a pick 'em. I'm not surprised they're making you pay a 3 on Chargers Texans. And again, when I was doing the open, it was 2.5 because it's almost like, you know, the Chargers, I don't know if you're old enough, movie posters where you just put the two most famous actors of the movie on the poster. Chargers are a movie poster team. You see Harbaugh, you see Herbert. Hey, that's enough for me. And people want to bet them. And their movie poster, I guess, is better than a lot of teams.
No, I totally understand it, which is why, again, to me, it was just value. But I also say this. You talk about wanting to act irrationally and fire people. When I saw Jim Harbaugh line his team up for a field goal from the half-yard line against the Raiders today, I would have ran down to the field and fired him myself on the spot. if you're talking about it. And I just, you're probably going to get that conservative play here. And I do think, for whatever it's worth, Houston coming out today and really at least trying in the first quarter, getting their starters out there, running some stuff, some scripted plays to get more continuity with CJ Stroud and these receivers. I think that's a little bit there. But you go back to some of these games for LA, they're somewhat similar to the Broncos, where some of these lesser opponents, they went out there and they beat them up. But some of these really good opponents moved the ball on them. Their defense, I don't think, is as good as it is on paper when you take on some of these better offenses. And I do think there's something to the fact that this team's a little overvalued. So gave it a shot with Houston here.
What about these other ones? Anything, you know, they all look about, look, it's, I mean, we're going to sit here on, you know, VSiN and these shows and just talk about these. I mean, there's only six games. They're going to make the lines generally correct. It's not like they're going to hang some huge mistakes, but anything you're thinking about, what's the game you're most excited for? Forget from a betting standpoint, what's the game you're most excited for?
So I didn't see what the Rams Vikings number
Vikings
was.
Vikings minus 2.5.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. I will be teasing my ass off on the Rams.
I will say, in terms of excitement, that's the one I'm most excited to see. I think that's got a lot of fun written all over it. O'Connell versus McVay sounds like a lot of fun. And frankly, look, like, I don't know what you thought of it, but I had the Rams, you know, catching the points there against Seattle today. McVay's a good game planner, man, and he always has his guys ready to go. And
almost won the game.
Exactly. They had a shot to win that game. They were very deep in Seattle territory with the fourth down. I like McVay a ton. I mean, look, McVay was O'Connell before O'Connell, right? Like, that was exactly what it was. Yep. And when you look at what McVay can do with this team, where they're constantly prepared, they're always ready with their game plans. They're going to have a plan ready for Flores. And I think on the flip side, O'Connell's going to have his own plan ready for a defense that's among the worst by EPA standards and many different other metrics, especially when it comes to that secondary. That has fun game written all over it. So I think excitement-wise, that would be it. I will say, I totally understand. Look, home field isn't really worth that much. If you want to bump it up a half point because it's a playoff, sure, I get maybe 2.5 there. But you're not going to get 3, that's for sure. Because if you're going to tell me I get a full 3 with LA at home against that team, I'd be willing to bite on LA plus 3.
Yep, absolutely. Any other takeaways from Week 18? I went into the day saying, man, it's not the usual excitement of Week 18, but at least the early window delivered. The whole drama of the NFC South was fun. Yep. The scoreboard watching of like the Packers, Bears versus the Commanders, Cowboys was fun. The whole Patriots blowing the first overall pick. What were your takeaways from Week 18?
Well, I think the easy takeaway for anybody would be that we do this every week, or every week 18, it used to be week 16. And I wish this year I did what I usually do, which is have a stronger kind of gut for this sort of thing. But if you look, especially in the morning window, Will, at these teams, the team that needed to win versus the team that didn't, right? Carolina versus Atlanta. Atlanta needs to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. Carolina wins outright, covers. Tampa Bay and New Orleans. Tampa Bay needs to win to get in. New Orleans has nothing to play for. New Orleans ends up covering. Dallas against Washington. Washington needs to win to improve seeding. Dallas has nothing to play for. Dallas ends up covering. Chicago against Green Bay, seeding on the line potentially. Chicago ends up covering and winning outright. Like, I think that, and we can even go down the list of teams like the Rams, where the market just thought for some reason Seattle had everything to play for, drove it up to 7.5. What happens? Rams cover the closing numbers. I just think that every single week in the week 18, week 16, whatever
Jets,
it used to be,
Dolphins is another one.
Yep, Jets, Dolphins, where these teams come in very overvalued by the market because they have to win. And sure enough, if you went against that every single time in every single game, you came out on top pretty well. And I think that's something we should take away every single week.
And the flip side of that is Denver versus the Chiefs, where Denver wins 38-0. But you know what? That's only one game, and you don't get you don't lose bonus points because you get blown out. Okay, once in a while you'll get a team that's just completely flat and they're dead, and you know what? You're gonna get rolled over. But for every one of those, you're gonna get you're gonna get a bunch of covers, as you mentioned. What's your take on the Patriots? The whole boy, it really is history repeating itself. Where Lovie Smith and Mayo, there's a lot of parallels. Mm-hmm. Where I said it on Friday, I had the Bear on, Felica. I said, you got to make up your mind before the game. If you want him out, get him out and tell their interim guy, hey, we're losing this game. If you're keeping him, keep him. Tell him you're losing. You can't send him out there where he thinks he's coaching for his job, motivated, right? Have him win the game and have him blow your pick. I know it's tricky in the NFL to tank a game, and you know, you got to put somebody out there, and these guys are all pros. They're trying. It's a physical, violent sport. So I don't know how you tank a game in the NFL other than, you know, you play your fifth string wide receiver at quarterback. It's hard to orchestrate that. But I just thought this was really sloppy how the Patriots handled it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I also think Mayo deserved to get fired. He wasn't a particularly good coach.
I agree.
You know, like I use this example for Dave Ross when we were on the air today on Live Bet Sunday, which was, Like, Dave, if I present to you a 5-win team and a 4-win team, you would think that there's not much difference between them. But then when I tell you the 5-win team is Carolina and the 4-win team is New England, you'd be like, oh, there's a chasm between them. Because at least Canales had his team better at the end of the year. And they were competing every single week. And they had players, i.e. Bryce Young, to invoke him one more time, that took very, very solid and tangible steps forward in their growth and development. Where with Mayo, it was like, holy smokes, Drake May is doing so much better in spite of everything around him, as opposed to Mayo looking like he had an active hand in the development of his team and his young quarterback. And I think that made a really big difference.
Yeah, and then you had Mayo doing things that didn't help himself, where he says to the fans, hey, you know, you got to know your role as fans or whatever, when you start to be condescending. Hey, when you're 3-4, if you're Belichick and you won 6 Super Bowls, you want to be condescending, or you want to be bad, fine. That you get away with it for the most part until you don't. But if you're going to be a first-year coach and win, you know, 3 games, it's just not going to work. And then he's calling out his players. You know, he called out the rookie receiver for not catching the ball. It's just, man, you can't do both those things.
That's that former player thing too, right?
Yes.
Like, when you're doing that, you feel like in the locker room when you played, of course we could talk to people like that. Of course you could call people out or do something. Right. That's the locker room mentality. I was a good player. That's how it worked. Generally not the way it works when you're talking about being the CEO of a team like that.
Ohio State is going to win the championship and beat who?
Penn State.
Okay.
I'm very turned off by Riley Leonard averaging 3 yards per pass attempt and not being able to throw the ball downfield. I'm sorry. And I know that Love is dinged up. They obviously lost a kid along the defensive line before the game against Georgia. But Penn State, at the very least, has a quarterback that can throw a forward pass. They're just as good defensively as Notre Dame. And I think that I think the overwhelming love for Notre Dame greatly ignores what has been 2 very mundane offensive performances in the first 2 rounds of the playoffs.
Yep, absolutely. Completely agree. How are you? Are you laying it with Ohio State, or are you just going
to,
you know, money?
So, yeah, I tried to get the day that was on, when the Rose Bowl was on, Eubanks and I were on. So I kept refreshing my apps, trying to get a number for that name to get hung, because I wanted to lay it with Ohio State. Ultimately got down on Ohio State minus 5.5. So I did lay it with Ohio State. So,
all right, man, we haven't done much NBA. We'll start to turn the page soon. It's going to be, based on my, you know, 30,000-foot view, it's going to be a Celtics-Thunder NBA Finals. Is that the correct view, or I'm jumping to conclusions?
You're jumping to conclusions because Kawhi Leonard came back the other day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, I'm just kidding.
Not in the mood. Vikings lost. I don't want to hear about the Clippers. Okay, the Clippers have played well. You know what? Van Gundy's done a good job.
You got to give him a job. Yeah, come on.
Lose a good coach, and you got Van Gundy there. That's a good deal. If you're going to get Kawhi back, they're going to be good. But your finals pick would be what, NBA?
Oh, at this point right now, it's hard not to go Oklahoma City and Boston. Although I'll say this. I don't think it is this shoe-in, and the Cleveland Cavaliers will not go away.
I knew you were going to say, that's your other team. That's your little that's your little, like, mistress team is the Cavs.
Sure. Now, the Celtics are great, and they're just going through a midseason swoon after just winning a championship, so I'm not freaking out too much about the stretch that they're on. But Cavaliers are legitimately good, and I wouldn't say that I would just chalk that up to, like, you know, a 5 or a 6-game series and move on for Boston. I think they'll get a run for their money against Cleveland.
Yeah, last year all winter I was just looking forward to a Boston-Denver NBA final, and whatever happened in that fourth quarter of Denver-Minnesota after a weird series, I have no idea. Denver just completely unraveled, couldn't make a shot, and I think the playoffs really unraveled after that. Hopefully, we get a really good playoff and a really good final this year. But we'll see. Where's Butler going, by the way?
I don't know where exactly, but I will say, by the way, I think I was on with you over the summer where you asked me what's the most surprising move of the offseason or during the season.
Yes.
And I told you, I was like, I think Jimmy Butler's going to be on a new team by the time we get to the post-trade deadline. I think it's going to be somewhere surprising, like a Brooklyn or something like that. Like, I don't think I just don't think there's that many teams that want to eat that contract. And again, he's got a player option. He could either leave, or you're stuck with that contract of over $40 million.
Though, no, what is Brooklyn? I mean, but he's not.
Sure, but he's not really going to add that much for that team. And you can flip him maybe next year for a team that's desperate for a star, right? Like, there's so many things you could do. Detroit is also a team that's just got all the cap space in the world that could want to make a push. And again, he has made it known that he would play allegedly for anybody.
Yeah,
what I mean? So maybe he goes to Detroit. Think about that from that
him
perspective.
Him and Tyreek Hill are going to be on the same flight out of Miami. Yeah. My goodness, both of them. Jeez.
But if you're
happy until they're not.
You get Detroit and you get him in like a Blake Griffin role for a couple of, like, you know, a year and a half. Remember Blake Griffin, if you remember a few years back, he dragged Detroit to the first round. It was awesome in like a sweep against Milwaukee.
Every game.
Yep, but he destroyed his knee in the process, but he was great. So maybe you get something like that just to get some butts in the seats for a playoff this series. But I think it's going to be somewhere that's not that sexy.
So the Suns don't have the firepower. They're the player at the blackjack table that's got nothing left to gamble.
Well, I'm not good with those analogies, but I'll say it's like, do you want to trade my busted hand for your busted hand? Right. Because it's like, here's Bradley Beal for Jimmy Butler. Right. Do you like that? That's the deal. And would the Miami Heat willingly take Beal? I guess he's got Florida ties, but he's also got injury issues and everything. Would you willingly take him back? I mean, you're just going to swap bad contracts and say, hey, let's maybe hope that these two guys are going to be better in their respective new spots.
Warriors don't make sense.
I mean, they do, but I don't know if there's enough there for them to actually make that flip. And some of their assets too, like if you're Miami, like, you know, what's it called? We just got news. Kuminga is going to be out for a little bit now. He just got injured. You're talking about a team whose assets have kind of dwindled. They haven't really looked that great from Pajemski to others. Like, it's not the most attractive thing in the world there. And if you're Golden State, I mean, I don't know how much you've watched them. I watch them now. And I think realistically, if you're evaluating what you are as Golden State, a Jimmy Butler is not pushing you past Oklahoma City or any of these other teams.
Here's why I don't think it's going to be somewhere like a Brooklyn or a Detroit or somewhere he doesn't want to go. He's a giant pain in the ass, and he can get word out there that, hey, don't trade for me. I'm going to make your life miserable, just like I made Minnesota, Philly, you know, the Bulls, the Heat, just like I made their lives miserable. Because if you're a Brooklyn, I don't want to trade for a problem. So it's got to be somewhere where he's somewhat, you know, willing to go there.
Well, I push back a little bit. He actually was like a hand in glove fit in Philly, not the OJ kind either. Like, that was a really good fit. But they chose, remember, they chose Tobias Harris over him. And I think that he would fit prices. I also think we underrate Jimmy Butler's ego and arrogance to the point where he would put in the effort of an FU year to drag the Pistons to, you know, a playoff series and a win in the play-in, and then ultimately can you imagine if Jimmy Butler's on the Pistons and they play the Celtics and he pushes the Celtics to like six games with the Pistons? Like, that would be something that he would definitely want to do.
Yeah. All right. Who's going to the Super Bowl and who's winning it before you go?
I'm going to be boring. I'll say we get let's go with a Chiefs Eagles rematch and the Chiefs win again.
Who did I have? I think it was Parles a week ago said had the same Super Bowl with the same prediction. Really? Chiefs over Eagles.
They're so annoyingly good, man. Yeah. The Chiefs, they just, and I think there is, I was hesitant to buy into, they were doing the basketball thing, which was not buying, like, you know what I mean? Not really trying.
Right.
And then you see them kind of stretch. They do the thing where they're like, oh, okay, it's time to get up. And then they stretch out. And then Patrick Mahomes drops 320 yards on Pittsburgh Steelers and they win like going away. And you're like, oh, no, they still got it. Like, they can kind of turn this thing on. And now they're going to get some rest and get ready to go. I think we're going to look up. They're getting healthier on defense. And we're just going to watch them now. Again, they have to win one fewer game. The road goes through Kansas City. And they're going to get the beaten remains of Kansas City, or excuse me, of Baltimore or Buffalo in the final round. Both of those teams are very beatable, especially when you look at their defenses. I would very much be surprised if it's not Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
I would pick them too. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not them because, look, they've won seven playoff games in a row at some point. And I don't think it's a really good team. Obviously, they're really good. They won 15 games. I don't think it's a great team, but they have the advantage. Like you mentioned, there's, let's call it a big three. There's the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, not only do they get the bye, but they don't have to play the other two, where if you're the Bills, you got to play two of them. Ravens, you got to play two of them. They only have to beat one of the other three. So I think that is a major advantage.
Oh, yeah. I would be surprised personally, but we'll see. In the NFC, I'm willing to be wrong. I think that's a crapshoot. If you tell me one of five teams made it out of the NFC, I'd be like, okay. So I'm on the Philly train right now, but it's not with the overwhelming confidence.
I can tell you who one of the five will not be. It will not be the Minnesota Vikings. They completely lay an egg on Sunday night. JVT, appreciate it, man. We got a fun week here. Thursday night, we got the college football playoff. Friday night, college football playoff. Then the Saturday and Sunday playoff games for the NFL. Man, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, I can't wait. It's going to be great. And hopefully the college football playoff gets a little bit better. Hasn't been the greatest, so hopefully we get some good ones.
It's been really, really bad. JVT, appreciate it, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
At me, JVT, on all social media platforms. VSiN Prime Time at 7 p.m. Eastern over on the Vegas Stats and Information Network.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks. All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Wednesday. We will have all week to break down the playoff games, the college games. Rate, review, and subscribe. See you then.